We are up to Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Tzadik, Ha Rishoin Berivo, Yavo Uvo Re'eyu Vachakor. Let me just take a look at this edition. There are some typos in my edition.
That should be hard because it's...
Uva, okay, it's a kriyul siv yavo. Yavo is loshen asid. Okay, one more time. Perik yud ches pasik yud zayin tzadik horishoin. Right, it was a typo. You see, my thing had there are a lot of mistakes in this edition. Okay, tzadik horishoin berivo uvore eyu vacha koro. The first person that we have to read the words out of order, as we do very often. In a riv, berivo, when a person is confronted with a quarrel, the one that comes first, the one that presents the argument first, appears to be a tzaddik. In other words, here's the issue: if you're a chas v'shalom, have a court case. Okay, let's even go. Let's talk back. Let's make believe you own a baseball team, and you're playing in the World Series. Do you want the home team advantage, or do you want to be a visiting team? Well, someone who's naive, doesn't know anything about baseball, will say, I'd rather be the visitor because I get to bat first. Right? A visiting team gets first licks. You get to bat first. But if you know something about baseball, you know that home team advantage, it's not just that you have all the fans rooting for you, you also have the advantage of being of last licks. Right? You get last licks. Then in case things are not going well, you'll have one more chance against your opponent. What about when you go chas v'shalom to court? Does anyone have this? I always wondered about this.
You always want to go. You want because you leave the jury.
Oh, so that's what you. That's what I think the average person assumes, that it's better to have to go last when you present a closing statement. You'd rather be the last one to leave the jury or the judge with your impression of the case. Shockingly, this pasuk seems to tell us it's just the opposite. Okay, das ter hepach mi das bal bais. Now it's not absolute because there are different interpretations of this pasuk. There are different mahalchim, but according to the simplest interpretation of this pasuk, it appears that when you are arguing a case in front of a judge or a jury, the one who goes first has the greater advantage. Okay, you have to check this.
When he goes last, the jury's asleep already.
It's like a shear. It's like a shear.
The research shows, if you remember a lot of information, the first and the last, remember the ends, in the middle.
It was in the middle, but between the first and the last. So I'll just tell you a joke. Someone told this to me on Shabbos. This is our official Shachter. He's a very big speaker. He speaks all over the world. So he said that you tell over a good joke. You know, you can't tell it over again until people forget. So how long does it take until people forget a joke? So he says the rule is 5 months. You say a joke, you can't say the same joke to the same audience for 5 months. A story, a good story, that 2 months. People forget stories faster than they forget jokes. A sharp line, a sharp word, a month. A Dvar Torah. You can say it even twice in the same speech. People won't remember.
You think that's funny? I think I told them one time. Between Mitzvah Marv, I just said, "All right, well, anything you want." I said, "They said, what did we learn today?" And I said, "Anything you want. Pick
a topic."
So one guy raised his hand and said, "If you could repeat the speech from this morning, because I fell asleep."
Okay, that's pretty good.
Was no reflection on your speech.
Nah, you always.
Okay, but this pasuk is an amazing pasuk, an amazing insight, where it seems to say that the one that gets first round is advantageous. The one who is able to make, you only have one chance to make a first impression. The litigant that makes the first impression upon the court, upon the judge, the jury, they have the most impact. That's what it says, according to the simple interpretation. That's what Pasuk says. Let's see one more time. Tzadik harishon berivo. which means beriva, when there is a quarrel, when there is a dispute. Harishain, the one that presents his case first, tzaddik, will automatically, even if he's guilty as sin, he has the ability to manipulate, to play with the minds of the judge and jury to convince them that he is the tzaddik, he is righteous. And then the one that comes next has the task of undoing what the first person did, the effect, the arguments who then comes the second, the defendant or the second party, vacha karo, and has to investigate, has to discredit, has to undo the effect, the impression that the rishon, the first person, has given over to the judge or the jury. That's what it says one time. Tzadik harishon berivo, when there is a quarrel, the one that goes first automatically is declared to be the righteous one, to be correct, to be innocent, to be the party that will be victorious. And if the one that wants to come and say this guy is telling you lies and nonsense and shekev chazav, so the second one, he has a very great task in front of him. Uva re'ehu v'chakaro, his friend, the second party, will come, have to investigate and undo what was done, the damage.
It's really not right. Shlomo HaMelech was the Chacham Mechadesh.
Yeah.
And he's telling you things that are correct, and what he's telling you is a falshkeit.
Why is a falshkeit?
Because people make an assumption that the first guy who's right is the tzaddik.
So you're saying an interpretation. There are many interpretations of this pasuk. I learned that with the mitzvah.
Kind of, this is what's reality.
Yeah.
But reality is not what's emes.
Exactly. So we don't. The world is not. Not everything in this world is fair. We all know that.
All of Nishri Lachari
is emes.
So this pasuk, you have to learn Shad a little different, because otherwise he's not supporting,
he's just saying what the reality is. We don't live in a perfect world, that's a fact. We don't live in a perfect world, and someone has to go first. Someone has to have a case, an argument in front of a judge. Someone has to present the case first, and he's telling us the Metzius is, and you can debate this. Like I told you, this is not what I thought. I always used to believe it was the opposite. That you have a case in front of a judge, like you said, the one that has the closing remarks, who leaves the last impression upon the jury, they have more influence. And he seems to be saying that's not so. The one that has more influence, the one that presents the opening arguments. Because the person's mind is like wet cement, and you make an impression upon a jury that the person is innocent or guilty, whatever the situation is, and then whoever's coming later has the job of undoing that first impression. You only have one chance to make a first impression. That's what it says here. Let's see what we get. Pasuk Yud Zayin in the Mitzvah of David. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Tzadik habari shoin beriv. A one that comes first in the quarrel. Yidmel la tzadik berivo. Appears to be righteous in his quarrel. Ki yuchal lahatim dvarov. He has the ability, lahatim, to flavor his words. Uliachnisam belev, and to cause them to penetrate into the heart of the listeners. Hoil sins. V'loy omar mibichilif, because no one has yet contradicted him. What he says is accepted as face value. When the friend comes, the second party comes and says just the opposite, he said it's complete sheker. Yidmeu l'shakran. The second one appears to be a liar. The yar belachkar bidvarav, and he has to increase. Yidmeu l'shakran. He tries to compare him to a shakran. The yar belachkar bidvarav, and the second party has to interrogate his words very much to discredit. And it's much more difficult to discredit someone who appears to be righteous. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi, possibly, yeah.
Aaron shows. Said to look at the Malmud.
The opposite, right? The Malmud
is saying he's saying that you should make it Gairo, but that's the next Pasuk.
Yud Ches, the next Pasuk. He's tying it into Pasuk Yud Ches.
But how do you avoid that as a judge?
You can't. Like I told you, we don't live in a perfect world. That is the reality. People who think that everything is perfect and is justice is naive. We all know that. Tzadik, Virale, Rasha, Vitovlo, everything is Bashkacha Pratis, and these little differences can make all the difference. That's how it is. That's how it is. How you do the best that you can. if it's true, this concept, if the way we learn Mishnah in the Pasuk is correct, because I saw in the article he says that some learn Mishnah is just the opposite. I couldn't figure out how he reads into the Pasuk, where it's just the opposite, where the person that has the second, the closing remarks is the one that has the greater influence upon the mind of the judge before he makes a decision. But at least according to the Mitzudos, it's clear as day, the one that has the opening remarks is the one that has the advantage in a court. You know, we have here, there's a lawyer here, Davin's here, very big lawyer, he comes here every so often. Is that his name? Not Weisiger, him also, but he comes here on Friday sometimes. He's a big lawyer.
Graven.
What's his name?
Mr. Graven.
Graven?
Yeah,
so we should ask him this. He probably had an insight into this, what is commonly accepted in the court. The one who has
the same.
What?
The prosecution always goes first.
Right. Yes,
the prosecution, so fine, but the prosecution goes first, the defense goes second, but in the big picture of things, is it accepted that the reason why the defense goes first maybe is because we want to give the defendant an advantage. You're innocent until proven guilty, so it's fixed. It's established that way. Is that the logic? I think that is the logic.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, in this country the logic is we want the one that has the closing remarks has an advantage. What?
The defense can hear what the other guy says,
right,
and then rebut it.
Right.
And then the last one, let's say the closing remarks.
They may not know.
No, but he could say.
You do not have
the right not to say anything.
Anything.
You have to prove it.
Okay, but in a typical case, they are closing remarks. Okay, I've seen some television shows. Law and Order. Right? The one, and they're, wow. The one thing I can tell you, in real life, it's not as good, right? It can't be. It's not as good. The eloquence, the most brilliant minds, putting together these dialogues, I don't know. I always thought that the one that has the closing remarks has the advantage. Of course, they have the music that also definitely enhances the place with the mind. Try that. No, but they have a certain, like, you know, there's a certain music when they say something. Right, so they should try that in court. They can't come in with a boombox and try to influence the minds. I think that's the common assumption, that the one that has the closing remarks has an advantage, and that's why the system is established where the defendant has the closing remarks. Okay, you can argue that you provide evidence, there's a rebuttal, and this cross examination, but the end of the court case in this country is their closing remarks. And the closing remarks, that appears to be the advantage, and the one who goes last, and they hear the pots going to the witnesses, that's not so. That's not so. You come before a judge, you come before a jury, they don't know from nothing, and you present the case, the one that makes the first impression is the one that's going to have the advantage. That's how we learn Shon the Pasuk.
I think a lot of that has to do with the difference in the jury system.
The system, the way it's established. Closing remarks.
It's very different than talking to people.
Okay, but let's say you don't have a jury.
College graduate, you're out the door.
Okay, but let's say you don't have a jury. Okay, there are a lot of cases, a lot of court cases today that it's decided by a judge, right. Even decided by a panel of judges, Supreme Court. You know, decided by a panel of judges. So then it's a whole different story. I don't know. It's a very interesting pasuk. Interesting yisod. Principle das palabayis hepech midas Torah. It's a common expression in Chazal. The attitude or the approach of an ordinary person usually is the complete opposite of what the Torah, what Talmidei Chachamim, how they look at something. And here is, I think, a typical example. Let's take a look at Rashi Pasuk Yud Ches. There is no Rashi in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Now we go to Pasuk Yud Ches. Now this continues with what we said before, Mid Yonim, Yashbis HaGorol. Quarrels are quieted by a goy. You have to read these words backwards. Hagoyrol, a lottery is yashpis, puts an end to, quiet, silences, mid yonim, quarrels, strife. There are times when there is no solution. You can fight it out, and the only way to put an end to the quarreling is just to cast lots. Ubein atzumim yafrid, now this can mean many things. It can mean that it can separate. Yafrid means to cause separation. Atsumi means mighty. Mighty in this context, mighty quarrels. You can have two people that are at each other's throats and trying to destroy each other, and if they'll just agree, you know what, let's just cast lots, and whatever the girl decides, that's what will follow. It will bring an end to mighty. Atsumim is short for mighty quarrels. It's a repetition of the word midyonim in the beginning of the pasuk. Even though here it means to quarrel, here it means mighty, but it's assumed that we're referring to mighty quarrels. Yafridu will cause people to desist, to separate from fighting and come to peace. Let's take a look at the pasuk Yud Ches. Midyonim hagoyrol yivatel. Yashpis means brings an end to hamariva quarrel, but bedvar chalukas dvar ma, in regard to dividing an estate, dividing property, a machlokes over mamon. Ki al yidei hagoyrol yivurar chelik olechav yachad, to a goyrol will be decided every person's portion. Ubein atzumim ubein hamachazikim b'mariva, and between people that are holding on to quarreling, people who have an agenda, who are fighting, Yafrid HaGarol, the Garol will separate. V'lo Yerivu Oid Me'ata, they will no longer, the Garol will cause them to separate, stand down from their quarrel, they will no longer fight.
Right, so, this implying that the Garol shows what Hashem wants?
Not necessarily. Garol can be, that's a deeper idea, but not necessarily. Every girl is according to Hashkacha Pratis. It definitely is true, but no, that's a Hashkafic issue. But if two people agree, we can't resolve this dispute between us. We can't decide. Let's just cast lots, and that will be the form of resolution. And if they accept it upon themselves, then that's fine. Then they can put an end to their quarrel. You want to talk about a girl that it's in Hashemayim. So first of all, you have to know, does the girl Hagra? There's a way to do it. You have to have Ruach HaKodesh, and you have to be a holy person to expect that Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to add a degree of Hashkacha Pratis that the girl will resolve, will give you a divine insight into the matter.
What Art Scroll, he basically says what you said is what Art Scroll interprets as pasuk, and he says, but it's that the litigants believe that this is what the way the, you know, Hashem controlled the casting of the lots, and they got what they deserved, whether it's true or not. But that's the way you feel a person. What I like about more what you just said, because if one of them is lying, one of them is not telling the truth, then what are the chances that he really believes that the lot was min Hashemayim?
Lotteries don't always work. Lotteries, a lot of times. Yeah, talk about the girl Hagra. This whole thing was revisited in the summer, when those three boys were kidnapped.
Right.
So there is a tradition that when someone is kidnapped, Rahman Litzlan, a girl Hagra was done. You take a chumash, you have the chumash that has the whole Tanakh, and there's a tradition how to do it. You have to mish seven times. And they went to different gedolim, to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky said you should go to a certain person. I don't remember all the details. And the whole thing was revisited, this whole idea, but it came out is that to be zecher to a goyel hagra, you have to be a very holy person. It's not for the faint of heart. You have to be a very, very holy person that you can expect that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to provide guidance to the goyel to decide what should be done, what it is. Ordinarily, you have a girl, so it's a lottery. It's just chance. It's just whatever it means. I don't really know anything about girls. Okay, let's take a look over here. The Rashi
tries to decide a specific question.
There are different types. Many times, you have a question. You have a specific question, and you're looking for guidance. Because where are these boys? Where are they? I forgot where the pasuk was. I don't remember the whole story anymore. There was a question. They say about a story about Rav Aaron Kohler, and then they say they've said it's not true. Rav Aaron Kohler, during the war, he had a debate: should he go to Eretz Yisrael, should he go to America? And he did a girl hagra, and it says Vayetze Aaron likras Moshe hamidbara. Aaron went to greet Moshe in the desert. So they interpret this to mean that who is the girl hadar of Moshe Feinstein? And Aaron was of Aaron Kohler. He's the one that made the girl Hagra. And the Midbar, America was known, was the code for the Midbar was the code name for America, for the pre-war Gedola Yisrael. The pre-war Gedola Yisrael of America. Oh, it's a Midbar. There's nothing out there. So that's a very, very famous story. I read in reliable sources that it's a Baba Maisa. No such girl was ever done, no part of this person didn't come out. Okay, it's a Baba Maisa. But even though this is a Baba Maisa, there are probably true stories that we don't know about. The real stories you'll never know about. But there probably are true stories that are just like this that we don't know about. It just goes to show, I have a question, what should I do? I have a dilemma. Should I go here? Should I go there? And you take a girl Agra, and the girl Agra is going to give you hadrach, going to give you direction what to do. That's a very dangerous thing, because if you're not on a madrega to make girl Agra, you may happen that the pus that will come out will tell you to do the wrong thing. Which all... with the names, with the 10 soldiers... There were 10 soldiers that they could not identify their remains, and he made a girl like God to identify. Yeah, it's in the book to identify who their names were. He did it the girl 10 times, and each time there was a name in the pasuk, and he actually used the halacha to put the name on the matzeva for the bodies of these 10 soldiers whose remains could not be identified. It's an unbelievable thing. Today they have DNA. Today there's a whole new world. I don't know what the follow up to that story.
Follow up is we should do the DNA on those guys.
Now they can do this to find out. Yeah.
Why would you disturb them just for the DNA?
Find out if you got the right guy in the right.
Everyone's happy with the right guy.
It's this. You can see this in a tzaddik in our times. The whole chapter.
The Lubavitchers have something similar. They have a book that they open up the book randomly to a page.
That's today. They
want to
write the Mashiach.
Oh, that's the Rebbe, the letter. You have a Shaila, and you take the Sichas from the Rebbe,
right,
and you just open it up, and wherever it opens up to, that's the answer to your Shaila.
Oh, really?
This is they can do this online also. They have the entire, all the Sichas online, and you press the button, and it randomly shows you one of the Sichas, and in the Sichas, where you're going to find. Anyone that relies upon that... I wouldn't rely upon that. Okay, but this is one says Midyanim Yashvus Gav Ubein Atzumim Yafrid. Rashi says Ubein Atzumim Yafrid Elu Balei Dinim, and the Balei Dinim are the Atzumim, the mighty ones who are at each other's throats. Yafrid, they will stop and stand down through agreeing to follow what it says in the Goral. Elu Balidinim Kamo Higishu Atsumosehem. Come close your Balidin, your litigants. Let the litigants come close to the judge. Two people that are quarreling in court. Al Shem Shebiri Vaisam. Why is the word Atsumim mighty associated with Balidinim? Shebiri Vaisam, due to their quarrel. Atsumos, due to their mighty quarrels. Kiruyim Atsumim, when a quarrel gets nasty, so it appears that each party becomes very mighty. O Loshen Chozek, O Loshen Otem, either means strength, O Loshen Otem means to close. Kuma Otem Einav, a person who closes up his eyes. He's silenced. That through quarreling, people either prevail or are defeated. When there's a war, there is usually a winner and a loser. So therefore, Atzmosehem, he refers to both the winner and the loser. One is going to prevail, and one is going to be silenced in his battle. Okay, so this is Rashi. Now this famous Medrash, the Medrash we once actually mentioned this not so long ago, because we discussed the girl not so long ago, that Moshe Rabbeinu, how was the Eretz Yisrael divided? It was divided through Goral. Al-Pi Ha-Goral Yecholek. And the question is, this is an amazing insight, and the question, why was it necessary for them to divide to the girl when Yaakov Avinu already described what kind of land each one's going to have? Zevulun l'chof yam yishkon. And if you read between the lines of the psukim, you can figure out exactly where everyone should get part of the land. So why was it necessary for them to have a girl to reinforce? So they can give their different madregas, but the answer is they weren't satisfied. Just because Yaakov, it's coming to lead into this pasuk, but it was jealousy. That why should he get land by the Mediterranean? I should get land in the rocky land or down in the south. Why should I get land here? Get land there? No one's going to be satisfied, even though Yaakov already said it. I mean, you can take the words of the pasuk, and you can reinterpret them a million ways. A good darshan can put a twist on a pasuk any way you want. any way you want. You say it means this, I'll show you it means that. In hindsight, after we already know what the portion they got, then it becomes clear as day, that's what the pasuk meant. But before the matter has been decided, you can twist and play with every single pasuk. So therefore, even though something appears to be clear as day, it ain't over till it's over. The goyrol is going to be yashbis. It's going to midyanim yashbis agorol. The midyanim means klalis shal shvatim, who are quarreling over which piece of land they should get, even though they already had telltale signs what they should get. They were only with silence, without peace, through the goyrol, rabbein atzim yafrid, and the goyrol was what caused the mighty shvatim to stand down and accept their portion in the land. An amazing insight.
Not which the shevet al pi agorol, because of what it said that Yaakov told him which,
yeah.
But each family in the shevet, that wasn't decided by Yaakov. In other words,
there were more different parts, right?
20 families, who gets Ben Ravlimot?
Right. There were more details that had to be worked out. There were more details that needed to be worked out, and also just because you have a general description of where in the land they're going to receive the land, but it doesn't tell them exactly the boundaries. So you needed the girl to define the boundaries in more detail. We don't know exactly the exact details of how the girl worked, what exactly it did. Okay, let's now go to the next pasuk, complicated pasuk, and there's a lot of discussion. Och nifsha Nikiryas Oz U Midyonim Kivriach Armon. Och means a brother. Nifsha means he has separated. Or it could also mean has transgressed. A pesha. Pesha is a sin. Nikiryas Oz from a mighty city. A Kirya is a city, Oz mighty. And by doing so, U Midyonim, quarrels have broken forth, and the quarrels are massive, like kivriach armon, like the bar of a palace. Okay, now there are a lot of things going on here. What exactly is it? It's a lock. So simply means a vriach means it's a lock. It's a crossbar, or some say it means a bolt, a nagar, a bolt he put into the door to keep the door locked. Or again, it could be a crossbar. Crossbar, same idea, you keep it on. Now, when you have an arm on a palace doesn't have a tiny little door. A palace has a massive, massive gate. So, in dealing with the crossbar or the bolt that's going to keep the gate of the city locked, we're dealing with something that is humongous, that is enormous. And we're saying that the quarrels, the midyonim, the dispute, the strife, that is broken forth between these two parties is massive, equivalent to the massiveness of this enormous crossbar that is used to lock the gates of a palace. Now, why are there so many quarrels? Because one brother decided he's going to separate himself from the mighty city. Now, when you mention a brother, does that mean? Is it when two brothers fight? Is that worse than the quarreling of two ordinary people who are not brothers? Or does a quarrel of two brothers, is it worse or is it not as bad? So there are different mahalchim in the mafarshim. Some learn it's the worst possible thing. When two ordinary people in shul get into a fight, so if you really work on it, the rabbi wants, he can make peace between the two parties. But when two brothers fight, no way. There's nothing you can possibly do to bring about reconciliation. What?
Too deep.
The hatred is too deep. Why is hatred too deep? Because the expectations are very great. And that's what they say, Rabbi Tabor. It's always Rabbi Tabor. And even greater than two brothers is the hate between a husband and a wife. If a husband, the marriage does not work out well, the ugliest fights in the world are divorce cases. Divorce court. That's the ugliest dispute, because why is the hatred between a man and a woman when they are divorced, why it's so great? Because at one point in time there was great love. Every marriage starts out with a degree of love or expectations, and when those expectations disintegrate and they fall apart, then it is replaced with enormous hate. But two ordinary people, they never had any great expectations for one another. They were just friends by convenience. And then when things don't work out, so it didn't work out, the hatred is not as great. So here when you're dealing with brothers, brothers represents an extreme. So when the och is nifsha, mikiryasub, when one brother, he's nifsha. Nifsha means he sins against his other brother, who is called his kiryasos. And that means because the two brothers should be a mighty city. There's no one that's more loyal to you, and that's more, you have greater hope and expectations in, other than your own brother, your own flesh and blood. So when one brother rebels against his source of strength, his own family, his own blood, then the Midyanim that result in its wake are equivalent to the Briach Armon. That's one interpretation, which we'll see in the Mitzvah in a moment. The other interpretation is just the opposite. Just the opposite. That when two brothers fight, even if their dispute is extreme, it goes to a degree where they're at each other's throat. If Rachmana Litzlan, there is a tzara, there's an emergency, then the other brother will come to the rescue like a bolt in a door. Just like the bolt in a door is what keeps the door secure, it keeps the door locked, keeps it stable, a brother will always be there to back you up, even if you don't get along with him. When you're dealing with two people who are not brothers and they don't get along, you can't expect one person to come to your rescue, because what do I really have to do with this person? But when your blood relative, when you have a fight with your blood relative and things are not going well, you can hope and expect that your relative will overlook the quarrel in order to come to your rescue. So these are the basic two mahalchim in this pasuk. And the two mahalchim mamish go mikotze el kotze, from one extreme to another extreme. Let's see the mitzvah of this first pasuk. Yutes ach nifsha, ach hanifsha mi'echov, a brother hanifsha that has separated. Nifsha here means has been separated from his brother. Two brothers do not get along. There is an ugly dispute in the family. Family feud. The mitzvah says it's not so bad. Mikol makom. Nevertheless, bevo olav tzar. If chas v'shalom a tzar comes upon one brother, yachzik b'moz echav, he will be able to hold on to his fortress. B'moz echav haposheya, a brother that has sinned against him, who he fights with, Yoser Mor Mikiryasos. So what he's saying, according to the Mitzvah, this is the name of Mikiryas, is more so. Och Nifsha, a brother that is rebellious, a brother who one quarrels with, is better, you have to hear the word better, is more reliable, is a greater source of strength than me, more so than a Kiryasos.
You're going back to what we learned before about Migdal.
Nig Mikiryas, I'm Nig Kiryas. I'm sorry, Mikiryas. I'm sorry, Mikiryasos.
It's important that he said Kiryas.
Not a Migdal. Right, the two different.
Before said.
The Lave Navon.
And Migdalois was a Tzaddik.
Tzaddik, okay.
It means that the reason he defends him is because of money.
The money?
Aisha. Don't you read? If he hates him and they're fighting, the only reason he will come to help him is because he's going to get something out of it.
Alright, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Interesting. Let's see what the Mitzvah is. Mikol makom, b'bol of tzar yachzik b'moz echav, in the strength of his brother, haposheya, who is rebellious, yoiser mikiryasov. Kama. Now, what about the end of the pasuk? V'hameriva shebineyem loitasmin, the quarrel, the feud between them in the past will not continue. V'hareyu kibriach hamavriach linol shari armon, their relationship will be like a bar which is used to seal the gate of a palace, asher lo yasmid lios nol, which is not locked. Okay, which means that a palace, there's a lot of traffic. You may close the gate at night, but first thing in the morning, the crack of dawn, the bar, the bolt is released, is open in order to let people through. Asher lo yasmid lios nol, ki anoshim rabim regilim lovay b'shar armon. So the quarrel that until now was continuous and was very deep, it will be kivriach armon, like the bolt of a palace, which is continuously open, which is released the first crack of dawn to allow people to enter. In other words, the quarrel will dissipate very, very quickly. So in the big picture of things, we'll repeat the passage again. Och nifsha, a brother who you're not on good terms with, we have to add some words now into the pasuk, is more reliable, will come to your aid, much more so, mikiryas oz, and all the money in the bank. All of your securities, all of your wealth, all of your things that make you happy, they will not bring you security like a brother, even though the brother is one who you are not on good terms with. And as far as this, the disagreements that you have with him in the past, they will dissipate, umidyonim, kivriach amon, like the bolt that goes into to a door which is very quickly removed to let the door open when people need to enter into one's home. Okay, this is the interpretation of the Mitzudos. Let's see Rashi. Rashi says, Och nifsha mikiryasos, yesh och nifsha miyachaf. There is a brother that separates. He distances himself from his other brother, Uma'abed b'mirdo, and through his distance, he loses in his rebellion, Kiryas Os. Rashi is going to the Medrash. He's telling us that when a person, there's some people, they fight over little things, and the collateral damage, the loss of fighting over trivialities is so great, they lose a Migdalos. For example, Lot could have had everything. He could have been part of Klal Yisrael. He could have had all the brachas. And instead, what did he get when the day was over? He got Lo Yavai Amoini Umayavi Bikahal Hashem. Not allowed to come into Klal Yisrael. Why? Because he will had a taiva for Mammon. Lot, Beavram, Esav, Yaakov, Esav, he sold, he could have had everything Esav, but he for some lentils, he wanted some lentils, he had a little to be followed, was Yetzahara, he gave up everything. What he gave up was the equivalent to the Kiryas Os. Umidyonim, Kibriach Armon, Umirivim Shebineyem, and the quarrels that break out between them now become so enormous, Mafridasam, Lo'olam, forever, Kibriach Zeh, so here the Rashi learns just the opposite of the Mitzudos. It's like a Briach Zeh Shenoylem Bo Shari Armon Shelo Yukon Subo. It's the best security. It's a bar that's in the ground, a crossbar grants the beam, which will not allow anyone in to enter. The distance between the two brothers is so great, like Fort Knox. No one is getting in or out. The distance between the two brothers is that great. So Rashi learns, and suddenly the Pasuk again, according to Rashi, the extreme opposite of the Mitzudos David. Och, a brother that's Nifsha, Mikiryaso, that separates himself, he loses out Mikiryasos. He has denied himself from enormous benefit. And with that, and in addition, Umidyanim, the dispute between them just grows and grows and grows until it gets to a point where it's beyond repair. Kivriach Armon, like the bolt of a palace, which is represents the security at its best, where the two parties cannot come near each other once again. And the mashal of the two brothers here is Yaakov and Esav, and Lot and Avraham. Okay, that's the basic interpretation of Rashi and the Mitzudos. I embellished it before with other interpretations, a little bit from the art scroll, other ideas in the hidden in that pasuk. Okay, there's also an interesting the Medrash just elaborates a little bit more on this idea. The Midyanim refers here to the Kohanim. The Kohanim. Why are the Kohanim called the Midyanim? So because what?
Yisrael. Oh,
the Lashon of Midian. Midian of Yisrael, they don't say that.
No.
But the Midianim refers to the Kohanim who are Shomrim, or guardians around the base Hamigdash. The Kohanim, we know how many, I forgot the number of Kohanim, there were Levim who stood guard around the base Hamigdash, and there were Kohanim who stood guard around the base Hamigdash. They are called the people who quarrel. Because Kohanim are Kimirive, there's a pasuk in Yeshaya, I forgot the pasuk, Kimirive, Kohen. Kohanim are hot-blooded people.
Short-tempered
people. And they like to fight. They like to fight, and indeed in the Beis HaMikdash, they would fight with one another often. And they were the ones, they used their koicha fighting to be the guardians. During the time of the Chashmonaim, they were the guardians of the Beis HaMikdash. They fought with the Yavanim. And during the time of the Bayi of the Churban as well, who were the ones who fought? Who were the ones that protected the Beis HaMikdash, the time of the Beis HaMikdash? It was the Kohanim. The Kohanim were the guardians. They are called here the Midyanim. They are like Kivriach Armon, they guard the Armon, the palace. What is the palace? The Beis HaMikdash. What do you mean they guard the Beis HaMikdash? They do not allow people who are Tanaim to enter.
Sorry.
The purpose of having Kohanim guard the Beis HaMikdash is for multiple reasons. One symbol is Kavod, to give honor. They're honor guards. Another reason is to make sure people who are Tanaim do not enter. Lo Yavo Tamei BeBeis HaShem. other psukim that say the same idea, someone whose tummy may not come into the Beis HaMikdash. Whenever you come to the Beis HaMikdash, you went to a security check. It wasn't just to make sure you didn't have any weapons, but they also would ask you, they would interrogate you, are you possibly tummy? Did you come into contact with a mace? Did you come in contact with sharetz? Is there any tumas keri? Is there any tsaras? So that was one of the main purposes of the Kohanim who stood guard by the Beis HaMikdash. They were the briach, they were the security of the Armon, of the temple, of the ultimate palace, the Beis HaMikdash. So here, what happened to Lot? Lot became similar, was denied access into Klal Yisrael with the pasuk Lo Yavoi Amoni Umoyavi Bikahal Hashem, equivalent to how the Midyanim, the Kohanim, who are full of strife, stand guard as the Briach Armon and do not allow people who are contaminated to enter. In other words, Lot's descendants became contaminated. They became the ultimate form of contamination, where they're not going to be allowed to enter into the Armon. Who's the Armon in this sense? Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is the palace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like the Kohanim stand guard, do not allow Tumeim to come into the Armon, the Beis HaMikdash, that's what happened to Lot in punishment for separating from Avraham. He became contaminated, and he was denied entrance into Klal Yisrael, the ultimate Armon, by the Torah, who through the prohibition of Lo Yavoi Amoni Umoavi Bekahal Hashem, because he separated from Avraham Avinu, who Avraham was called the Kiryas Oz. Avraham was a city of might, a city of strength, a source of strength for this world. Okay, that is one interpretation. Another interpretation, this pasuk refers to Koyrach. It's this week's parsha. In this week's parsha, we list off the Eile Rosh Beis Avoisam, and you begin to enumerate all the names of the Shvatim, all the names of the Klal Yisrael, and right away you learn about Moshe, and you learn about Moshe's cousin, a Korach, from the same Shevet. So we call Korach the brother of Avraham. He distanced himself from Klal Yisrael by rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu, and the result was he was separated. He was distanced, like Kibriach Armon, the same idea. He was set aside, he was swallowed up in the ground together with all of his followers. Those basically the two Mahalchim of either it's Lot the Avram or Korach versus Moshe. Rashi adds in another thing which I don't have in front of me, Yaakov and Esav, also the two were once brothers, and the Esav separated from the Kiryas of Yaakov, who was the Kiryas Oz, and because of that he was denied access into Klal Yisrael. And there's other one other last point about the Kibriach Armon. This is coming up only in a few weeks. Parshas Truma, the Briach HaTichoin. The Briach HaTichoin in the Kroshim, there were three Briachim. There was the Briach, the top and the bottom, and there was the Briach, the bar which went through the Kroshim in the center, which went through with a miracle. And that Briach never was removed. The Briach HaTichoin, and it's a permanent separation. The Major says, just like the Briach HaTichoin in the Mishkan was permanent, and it went through the entire Mishkan, people that make machlekes are distanced from Klal Yisrael with a degree of permanence like this Briach HaTichoin of the Mikrash. Let me read what it's over here. Haloi Haya. Mo habriach hatichoin einoy zos mitoch hakroshim kach Moshe sotu Moshe vabriach hatichoin besoch hakroshim avriach benakatz lakatze, and Korach was denied access into Klal Yisrael because of what he did to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk.
They have a fire charei arma.
And what?
Yeah. They have a fire called charei arma.
A piet? And what does it say in the piet?
Nobody says it.
About okay, let's go to Pasuk Chaf. To the fruits of man's mouth is his stomach satisfied. To the asifas of yispa, the produce of his lips will grant him satisfaction, will grant him satiation. Let's take a look at the Metzudas Pasuk Chaf. Pasuk Chaf in the Metzudas Mipri Ma'amorei Pif, through a person's words Tispa Bitno, his betin is satisfied. Ratzalaymar Hagmul Kishamifol Hatoyvi Hi A person will be satisfied one way or another, either with punishment or with reward, depending upon his actions. If his words, this really is the lead in Pasuk Chaf, is a lead in to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, the famous Pasuk Maves HaChayim B'yad Lashon. Life and death are in the hand of a tongue. B'yad Lashon. So Pasuk Chaf really complements that idea by telling us that a person's words will bring him satisfaction, will bring him payment in full, whether it's good or bad. One more time, the person's reward or punishment. The words that come forth from his mouth will bring him satisfaction. Okay, there is no Rashi. Now, there's a very interesting medrash on this pasuk. It talks about a maisa, interesting story. It happened in the time of the Gemara, where there was a certain type of animal, and they were not sure if the animal was a chaya or a behema. What is the nafgamina between a chaya and a behema? Chalef. Is the chalef mutter or the chalef asr? A behema, the chalef is asr. A chaya, the chalef is mutter. Deer, they shach deer today. The very big mile of deer, you don't have to remove the chalef. All the chalef of a chaya is mutter.
What about the Gid HaNasha?
The Gid HaNasha, I don't know. But the Chalev is Mutter. So, there was a Maisha Hayu with a certain type of animal. Let me read the animal. Ahi Iza Karkois. There was the goat of Karkos. It's the name of a goat of a certain type of place. I mean the type of deer. The Havi Bey Resh Galusa, that was in the home of the Resh Galusa. The Okar Melot Sana de Tarba Mine, they extracted a full basket of fat. Delicious fat was dripping on this schmaltz that came out of this container. Rav Achai, one of the gedolim, one of the rabbanim in the Bei Nesia, he told Olam, don't eat it, it's treif. It's a chiyuv karas. It's treif, don't eat it. And Rav Shmuel B'Rei Rav Avohu Ochal Minei, but Rav Shmuel B'Rei Rav Avohu, he ate it, so he had a good lunch. He had a delicious lunch. Fights over the hashgacha, Karya Nafshe. It says that Rav Shmuel B'Rei Ravo, he ate it, and after he ate it, he said, ah, do you know why I get to eat this? He applied to himself the pasuk in Mishlei, this pasuk that we've just read, Mipri fi'ish, from the fruit of man's mouth, Tispa bitna, my stomach is satisfied. Tzvua sifasav yispa, the fruit of my lips brings me satisfaction because I exerted myself to learn Torah by a certain group of Talmidei Chachamim who taught me that this chelev is mutter, this animal is a chaya. So it's only because of my amelus b'torah. Amelus b'torah is always the code for amelus is peh, is Amal peh, toil with one's mouth. I went to study by Talmidei Chachamim, and one of the fringe benefits is they revealed to me the Mesorah, the tradition, that this creature is a chaya. It's not a behema. I'm a mela. The chelev is mutter. You, my friend, you were lazy. You didn't want to go hear the shir. You wanted to go and sleep late. You didn't want to travel the distance and exert yourself to learn and study by this Talmud Chacham in order to exert your mouth. Again, it's a code for the study of Torah. And that's why you never learned by him. You never picked up the tradition that chelev is mutter. So I can apply to myself that it's due to my effort. The code is through my diligence in learning Torah. Torah is always studied through the peh and going to Rabbeim to learn Torah. That's why now I know the halacha that it's mutter. Tispa bitno. I have what to eat. But all of you people here, you're going to starve. Tzluas sefas of yispa, the produce of my lips of learning Torah is what's going to give me satisfaction. You don't know the halacha, so you have to be machmir. You can't eat, and you're going to be hungry today. Very interesting. Koyach dehetera odef. A basic principle in halacha, it's very easy to be machmir. Osser. The kunz is to be matir.
No, to be matir.
Achli halacha. You got to know the halacha. So why is it easy to be asked? Because you don't know the halacha. I don't know. So I don't know. I have no choice. I have to be machmer. But if you spend, you exert yourself to delve into the matter, and you know exactly what the halacha is, you can clarify that in this particular instance, it's mutter. It's mutter, and you don't have to live a life of precious. You can do things otherwise people think would be aser, only because you exerted yourself to know what the halacha is. And that's exactly what it says here in this pasuk. There are fringe benefits for amelus betorah. You'll be able to be matter things that otherwise people would think are forbidden. Okay. That's the next pasuk. That's, I'm going to get there yet. Don't ju- Okay, now we go. Let's see.
Don't rush the mothers.
You have what to eat. Okay, let's see. Moves ha'chaim. So we always we have a chaim v'amesin. I think another pasuk. There's another pasuk, but here it says moves ha'chaim v'yad lashon. Death and life are in the hands of lashon. V'haveha yochal pe, those that love who love what? They love to. The Mitzvah says ha'oyev laharbois ba amarim, who love Torah, who love to learn Torah. Yoichal piri will eat from its fruit. Let's say look at the Mitzvah in its entirety. Pasuk of Aleph b'ad Lashon, b'koyach haLashon mosu hamoves v'chayim. Imyidah. What does this mean? According to the Mitzvah, we're talking about divrei Torah. We are continuing the theme of the previous pasuk, mipriyir priish tis babidno, which means, well, the Mitzvah said it means a person a reward for saying things or for what comes out of your mouth, good and bad. But here he says it refers to divrei Torah. Person speaks lashon hara, the punishment is death. A person who wants to speak words, good words, words of divrei Torah, yoichal piria. So take it back both ways. Those who love to talk. Yoichal piria will eat its fruit. What kind of fruit? It depends. There are two types of fruit that are produced by the tongue. There's fruit that is healthy, and there's fruit that's poisonous. Fruit that's healthy is produced by divrei Torah and words that are proper, and fruit that's poisonous is produced by lashon hara. So those who love to talk will eat from its fruit. Rashi learns ahoyeves lashona, one who loves his tongue, umargil l'torah, and one who speaks in Torah. Rashi only wants to say v'havecha, not like the Mitzudos means speak well, to love your tongue, to use it for good things. L'oichal schara b'olam hazeh, will eat from its rewards in this world. Okay, so Rav Meir, you asked the question, why is mavis first? I think it's pasha, because it's more dangerous. It's more, it's pasha. It's more, you have to be on guard to not to say harmful things, but you don't have to be on guard to say good things, not to say good things. That's not the problem. The tongue is much more dangerous than it is can be used in the positive form. Now there are multiple midrashim, as you can imagine. Okay. Now the first thing is, why is the tongue called a yad? Hamoves v'hachayim biyad lashon. Okay. I forgot. There's a very interesting. Okay, let's leave. I don't remember. Yeah. Yeah, what does he say? Biyad?
He says biyad. He says, because a lot of times you think, you say, him? I don't want to say lashon hara. In other words, the motion that you make with your hand.
Motion.
It tells you everything.
Body motion. Oh. Biyad lashon. The tongue has a yad. The tongue, the words don't just have.
As you said something.
It's not just sound. It's the body motions that accompany
right.
The sound. The yad is the body motion, the body motions that accompany your language. That is also brings mavis and chayim. Okay, then we have over here, this is a long medish, but it's an interesting medish. The medish is not a medish, it's Gemara Masechet Arachim, and the Gemara Masechet Arachim puts together three psukim. It takes note of the following, makes a pause on three psukim. Well, let me start. The first pasuk is Ma yad mimisa af lashon mimisa. The Medrash, the Gemara focuses on why do we call the yad, the tongue with the word yad, to tell you that just like a person's hand has the koyach to bring death, a person can pick up a knife and can kill a person, likewise a lashon, a tongue, through his words can bring about a person's death. If you say the wrong thing, a person can be insulted, can be harmed, and can commit suicide. A person can say the wrong thing and can cause another person to kill someone else. So the lashon, the tongue, is equivalent to the koyach of the yad, even though a tongue cannot possibly kill a person physically. You can lick a person all you want, he's not going to die from licking, but words that come out of the tongue have the koyach of what a person's hand can do to someone else. That's the first part of the Gemara. Lama l'cha, ma yad mimisa, just like a hand can bring death, af losha mimisa. Now the Gemara asks a question, if that's the case, vim toimar, ima yad, ina mimisa, ila b'samachla, a yad can only kill a person in its vicinity, a tongue, so maybe we would think that the tongue, harsh words, can only bring about the death of a person nearby, in the same room. Af loshon einam mimisa ela b'samachla. So the Gemara says, no, don't say that. Talmud Lemer, it says in the pasuk, it's the second part of the puzzle, a pasuk in Yirmiyah, chetz shochut l'shoinam, a sharp arrow is their tongue. A tongue is compared to a sharp arrow. An arrow can travel a great distance. Just like an arrow can be shot a distance, so to a tongue, the words that come out of one's tongue can kill a person on the other end of the world. I shouldn't say that. It can kill a person at a distance. How far can you shoot an arrow? So let's assume you can shoot an arrow 500 feet. You can say something, and through what you say, 500 feet away, a person can be killed. Now, v'im toimar, the Gemara is a question, im ochitz is limited. You can't shoot an arrow more than 500 feet. Rak ad arbor mechamisha amo. So to afloshan, I would think, it only can cause harm ad arbor mechamisha amo. So now enters in the third pasuk of this puzzle, Tamalaymar, pasuk in Tehillim, Shatu Vashamayim Pihem Ulishoinam Tahalach Baretz. Hashem set in the heaven their mouths, and their tongues travel among the earth. And this pasuk, a person's tongue, is compared to the Shamayim Baretz, to indicate that a person's words can travel from one end of the world to the other end of the world. And we all know this to be true today with technology. Davar Pashut, in one email, words can travel to the ends of the world. You have to see this video, the video of the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation on Tisha B'Av. They have a video every year on Tisha B'Av, so they're getting more sophisticated. Besides the regular videos, they have sideshows. They have like Super Bowl halftime commercials in their videos. So they had a little cute little sideshow of a person who went into the butcher shop. It's fantastic how they did this. They went to the butcher shop to buy the most expensive meat. And standing behind them on the line was a neighbor. And the neighbor was shocked to see that this melamed, a Rebbe, who teaches in Cheder, who doesn't seem to have much of a parnasa, is able to afford to buy the most expensive meat. So while they're waiting online, this woman, she takes out her smartphone and she sends a text to the neighbor. I'm here in the butcher shop and I can't believe that Rabbi so-and-so is buying. I can't afford to buy this. My husband, he works 18 hours a day to make a parnasa, to pay tuitions, to pay the mortgage, to pay kolo, to support my children kolo. And here this Rebbe is able to afford to buy the most expensive meat, which I can't afford to buy. So she, in her frustration, she sends a text from her smartphone. And it shows, it's fantastic how they did this, that they show how the text was received by the neighbor, and that neighbor forwarded to someone, and it shows a count of how many people received, and how many people began to spread the information, and one thing led to another. There was a whole, I don't remember all the details, and basically by the time that this Rebbe got home, already 400 people were talking about it, that he was in the store buying this expensive meat, and people were already making all these assumptions, and someone that had already in mind to do a shidduch with the Rebbe, already already canceled, and then they started saying the Rebbe is a ganef and this and that, and his wife already received the phone call, which was indirectly a result of the text that was sent in the butcher shop when he was waiting online when he put in the order for the meat. And the truth was, the Rebbe wasn't even buying the meat for himself. He was doing a favor. He was picking up meat for sheva brachas for his next door neighbor. You go to the butcher shop, do me a toiva, I have an order, we have a sheva brachas, can you please do me so kind and pick up this cut of meat for later. It wasn't even for himself, he was doing so in a toiva. So here you have a person that's biyad halashon. You can say biyad means it's you articulate, you turn your words into a writing or into a text, into an email, and how lashon can spread. In by the time he left the store, he got home, 400 people already was talking Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, about this person. And that's what it says in the third pasuk. That's worse than an arrow. An arrow can only do damage limited. And the tongue can do damage from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. So Sach HaKol, the Gemara says we have three psukim which tell us about the koyach of the Lashon. The first pasuk is pasuk over here, Moves V'Chaim Biyad HaLashon. The second pasuk is in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyah says that it's not just a yad, we extend the scope of the tongue to a chetz, to an arrow. And then comes the third pasuk and says it's not just like an arrow, it can go from one end of the world to the other end of the world. So what's the obvious question now? Once we have the third pasuk that says that the tongue is as dangerous as the koyach to go from one end of the world to the other end of the world, why then do we need the pasuk called comparing it to an arrow? And why then do we need the pasuk comparing it to a yad? That's the second part of the Medrash. If we already know that the koyach of the tongue can travel from one end of the world to the other, so why then did the Torah tell us the pasuk that compares the tongue to an arrow, which only can travel, let's say, 500 feet? So the answer is that it can kill, because when you travel, the words that travel from one end of the world to the other end of the world, that pasuk does not indicate that it's lethal. It doesn't say there's anything that's lethal about it. All it says is the words travel.
That's
what I said. This pasuk, our pasuk, is Hamoves V'Chaim Biyad. It's part of a series of three pasukim in the Gemara Masechta Arach and Tesvav. We're going through a process. Arach and Tesvav. Pasuk number one, our pasuk, Moves V'Chaim Biyad. The Gemara then says there's another pasuk, Chetz Shachot L'Shoinam in Yirmiyah, not here, in Yirmiyah. And then the Gemara says there's a third pasuk, in Tehillim, Shatu V'Shamayim Pihem U'L'Shoinam Tihalach Baretz. So the Gemara says, why do we have to have three pasukim? So we go in order. But if we only have the first pasuk, I would think it's only like a yad. A yad only can cause harm in its vicinity. So we then go upgraded to a chetz. A chetz can travel a long distance, 500 feet. But that's not enough. We then need the pasuk of the Shamayim Baretz, that it can travel from one end of the world to the other end of the world. So now the Gemara goes in reverse. So once the pasuk says from one end of the world to the other end of the world, why then do we need the pasuk called chetz? Chetz brings to the table the maila of it being lethal. A chetz is a bullet. It's an arrow. It can bring death. It's not just that your words can spread from one end of the world to the other end of the world and just cause some discomfort. It can actually bring death. Chetz brings death. It's lethal. The ketil kachetz. So now that we know they can bring death like a chetz, why then do I need the pasuk of Hamachayim v'hamoves, Hamoves v'chayim biyad haloshon? That pasuk teaches us, the Gemara says, something very shocking, a new interpretation, that the death that the loshon brings is not just to the victim, it's death to the speaker. When the pasuk says Moves V'Hachayim Biyad Lashon, so we simply interpret this to mean until we came up with a series of three psukim, that the victim is going to die because he is the subject of this Lashon Hara. We already know that from Chetz. We already know that the words can travel, and thus it would force us to reinterpret the pasuk Moves V'Hachayim, meaning the one who speaks Lashon Hara is Chayiv Misa. It will boomerang against him, and he will die. He will bring about his own death. And we learn this from the Maisa with Doye Kwadim. One of the famous Gemaras, the Gemara illustrates the Kayach of Lashon Hara. It kills three people. It kills the speaker, the one who spoke Lashon Hara. It kills the one who's spoken about, and it kills the people who listen to it. Where do we learn this from? Doyeg Kwadami. Doyeg told Shaul that Achimelech gave food to David HaMelech. David was running away from Shaul, and he accused Achimelech, who was the Kohen Gadol, for supporting Shaul's enemy David. Shaul was Mekabel the Lashon Hara. What was the result? Because he was Mekabel, Shaul died, he was killed. When Shaul was killed by Pelishtim, the Gemara makes a drasha from an expression of the word from the word Ki achazani hashavots. When Shaul was about to die, he told his the one who carried his weapon, stab me, because achazani hashavots, the shiver has seized me. Chazal learned from the word hashavots, it means mishpitzois zahav. The ephod and choshen had mishpitzois zahav. It's because I killed the Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol of Noiv Ir HaKohanim. The reason why Shaul died this miserable death by the Amaleki is because he was Mekabel Lashon Hara from Doik HaAdoimi, that Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol of Noiv Ir HaKohanim, is supporting his enemy David. So the Mekabel, Shaul, who was Mekabel Lashon Hara, he died. Doik, who spoke Lashon Hara, also, he also was killed. The Melech said most. He also went out of the pasuk. He was killed for the sin, and the one who they spoke lashon hara about, Achimelech, was also killed by Shaul. By Yomer HaMelech, most Tomos Achimelech. Achimelech is supporting David; he must be put to death. So we have here three people died because of lashon hara: Doeg, who spoke lashon hara; Shaul, who was Mekabel lashon hara; and Achimelech, the one upon whom the lashon hara was sent, also died. This is worse than ordinary weapons, because when a person shoots a weapon, activates a weapon, the only one that dies is the victim, is the target, not the one that is shooting the weapon. And that is what we learn here from Moves v'hachayim biyad lashon. It's the one that speaks the lashon hara, he's the one that's now subject to Moves, to death. And that's why we need this pasuk, because we already know that lashon hara can kill from the pasuk of chetz shachur lashonim. That tells us that the lashon hara, when it reaches its destination, will bring death. And we also know that it can travel from one end of the world to the other end of the world. So sacha kol, each pasuk has its own maila. The pasuk in Tehillim tells us that lashon hara can travel from one end to the other end of the world. The pasuk chetz tells us that lashon hara is lethal, and the third pasuk of our pasuk in Mishlei tells us that the one that speaks lashon hara will suffer nisa as a punishment. All right, there's more. We'll do more tomorrow.
Chetz pasuk.